Welcome back to your A-List Lowdown, coming at you May 20th, 2025 with Mental Made and Be All That You Can't Be. Our first show is a monetized YouTube partner channel. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can now send us super chats or you can sign up to be a member. I mean, I just threw that on because that's the way the YouTube people can get involved in the value for value. Like I say, you know, there's not really any perks. I mean, but it just helps us keep the show going. We're just going to keep doing the show. And if you get some value from it, sign up for a membership and or give us some super chats. I mean, you get some bragging rights. You always get the bragging rights. And I think if you do super chats, your like comment is highlighted and things like that. So I've sent super chats to some shows, mostly to get...
We'll read the super chats. How about that?
Yeah, a lot of channels read the super chats. So that when I'm trying to like get a hold of them, I'll be like, oh, I'll just send these guys $5. And then they got to read it. That's how I got a hold of the... Oh, I forget now. The Elevate podcast guys.
Oh, yeah.
Got them talking about the A-List on their live stream.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
good. So I was going to get them on the show, but then, you know, it's really hard to communicate through YouTube.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Almost impossible. Yeah. Like, it just seems crazy to me that there isn't a way for
you to direct message people and stuff.
Yeah, I get it. I don't want the people because, I mean, we get a load of negative feedback on this show from people that hate us. It would seem. I don't even know why they watch the channel because they seem to think that we're idiots or misinformation or we're in the American payroll or...
You think I'm not watching those comments?
Yeah, you can handle the A-List comments. It'd be too much for you. But I mean, I just laugh and keep going because we get way more interaction on this stuff than we do on any of our other sort of channels where we get a lot of positive feedback. You know, you get the odd, but this channel, I mean, you start delving into politics and there's no winning. I mean, we got a ton of positive feedback too, but, you know, the negative people seem to want it more. They seem to, you know, the way the positive one is like, good show guys. Thanks. And the negative guy will give you a couple paragraphs then while you're a piece of shit.
But not really give you any good examples of what you're wrong about though. I noticed that.
Now Twitter's the best because a lot of times I'll go to reply to the comment and they've just like sent me this awful message and then preemptively blocked me from...
Oh yeah, that's what they were doing to me too. About the... it was about what was it about now? I think it was about the 50. I think it was about the 51st state stuff or something. Or about...
Oh, that'll do it.
I'm trying to remember now. But then they make this comment like they got you, like they've got you, and then they block you. It's like, oh yeah, good one. So
you
won't let me engage back, but you've made some comment to me. Oh, you know, why don't you leave? Oh yeah. It's like, well, why don't you leave then?
I'm trying.
And you should leave. Block. And you should leave. Block.
I'm trying. Are you even allowed to do that?
What do you think the whole thing is about? We're trying to leave. Like, wants just to physically go down to the States and beg for a green card or what? I mean, how, you know.
I was just in the States. It's great. It was fantastic. Dude, I went to Costco, filled up two carts full of stuff. Two carts full. Like, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
How much do you think it costs?
$600.
$547. I mean, the chick at Costco said it too quick because I meant to ask Shauna. I was going to be like, hey, how much do you think? But she had already said it out loud. So Shauna's like, I heard her. But I was like, if it was in Canada, dude, you'd be looking at $1,200 or $1,300. Easily. And even a couple of the meals, you know, I had to go out and buy big meals for 40 or 45 people. Man, I went and got barbecue for 45 people, brisket, turkey, the whole spread, you know, with dessert even. How much do you think that cost?
$800.
A little more than that. It was $1,200.
$1,200, okay.
But for 40 people, right? That's only $30 a head for a nice, you know, what I would call a nice dinner. I feel like if you were doing that in Canada, it would cost you a small fortune.
Everything
is just sort of a small fortune. I do notice that a couple things have started to come down slowly. There's been I've actually gone to the grocery store recently and been like, oh, it's actually for the first time in a long time, a little less than I expected it to be. So
yeah, but not enough to offset the carbon tax refund. Like, you know, that people were getting, and I'm not talking about us. Yeah, it's just frustrating. I can see these people on pensions here, or people that like don't get enough from the government to live, that they were expecting those rebates, right?
Because they're already now the same price it was before they canceled the carbon tax.
And you try to explain to them, like, look, everything has gone up because of these carbon tax stuff, and you don't see it because you're buying the stuff, but and then you get this rebate, but everything should come down to offset that. And it probably won't. That's the sad part about it, is it probably won't. These people that need the money probably will be out now.
Which is, I mean, we never should have been giving them the money.
I know. No, I know. I know. And it should, I know.
I only got one payment out of all that. I ended up getting just one measly $400 payment out of the whole carbon tax fiasco. I got one paid, the last one, which I don't even think I was supposed to get. Because I think once I filed with the wife, I think like all the benefit stuff just automatically goes to her.
Right.
I don't even get my own child benefits anymore. It goes to her. So anyway. Yeah, so I've been gone for a week. I've been in the States for a week. And I mean, gas is cheap down there. I got to say that. It's like super noticeably cheaper when you're filling up the tank for even the vans, you know, like to fill the vans from empty is like $65 US, which is what, you know?
95.
Not even that much, you know, it's not 150. So it's probably like $80. It's in the $80 to $85 range to fill up. That'd
be probably $120, $150 here.
Oh, yeah. You're $120 at least here in Canada. So, like, I rented the same truck as my old truck that used to be like $120, $125 to fill here and down there. It's, I mean, even when I had it right down to empty the one time, it was, I think the most it cost me to fill was $60 American, which is about. Probably about $85 Canadian. So it's a noticeable discount.
Yeah.
It was the lowest I filled up for was $2.95 a gallon. So, I mean,
I don't have a lot of clips of it, but there was people talking about how they're not going down the States anymore. There's less, there's a huge problem with Canadians going out of the States. There's a whole bunch of people that just don't want to go down, which is sort of hurting some small businesses in the States over the border. And also people are afraid to go down. They think that, have you heard this? That they think that if you've had any anti-Trump stuff in your social media that you'll get detained down there. I mean, they have a fear.
Well, I did have some family members express concern for us going to the States.
I'm just blown away by this whole, there's a whole inversion happening.
I'm like a celebrity down there. It'll be great.
So Ian, like what? So Elon and X, like now you can pretty much, there's a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't allowed before on there.
And
the people that are like worried about Trump and all that have fled to Blue Sky. And it looks like they're worried that because they're saying bad things about Trump. I mean, if you're like advocating for violence or something, well, no shit, you should be scared to go down, you know. But if you're just saying bad things, if you just don't agree with them, I mean, this isn't the UK and Europe where they're literally arresting people for tweets and hate speech and all that. So. Have you heard that though? Is that a legit complaint? I was like,
what? I've seen it firsthand where we were just told to watch out while we're down in the States.
But from family members up here?
From Canadian family members that were like, you know, even it might not be welcome down there. So I had a great time though. Everyone's super nice.
But Darren, if you were, but let's
order
say
your cards were super nice.
No, but Darren, what if you were a socialist and you were pissed off at Trump and Elon? And you were saying like "fuck Elon" and "fuck Trump" on the social medias.
Well, then you're not going to go anyway. I mean, let's be honest.
What if you have a what if you have a work conference or some reason that you got to go down? Would you like? Have you heard this that like they're going to detain you because
I did all that stuff during Joe Biden's presidency. I didn't have any trouble.
No, I know, but that was the Joe Biden. Now it's like Trump, right? So now they're worried that you're going to get detained. I mean. I
don't know. I don't see any. I do hear these stories of these people can always send me an article about someone who got detained for some reason.
Does that blow up into like it's a systematic detainment of people that hate Trump? I mean, I just don't think that's happening.
From my experience traveling down there, It was great both ways. The TSA even was great. The in the Salt Lake airport on the way out, someone recognized my Ayn Rand shirt and got into a big fuck the system rant because I had let the AI take my picture. She's like, you didn't let the AI take your picture, did you? And I was like, yeah, I did. I did let it. She's like, yeah, you're allowed to say no. And I was just like, yeah, but I got a plane to catch, lady. I mean, you are allowed to say no. It's a lot easier to say no if you're an American citizen that's not in a rush.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're Canadian, it's a little tougher. So, yeah, I don't think you'd ever have a problem personally, but I could get that. Here's the thing is, you should also be worried in Canada, but I guess you wouldn't be worried in Canada because you're not freaking out against the Canadian state. But
when am I going to be afraid in Canada?
Oh, soon, I would say. Yeah, soon.
Soon. So, I mean, maybe we're doing the same fear mongering. Maybe that's not justified either, but I feel like they're getting all wound up.
More justified because there's people who have been charged for what they've said on the internet. In Canada and especially in the UK. And the UK is rampant and we seem to be trending in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so mind-blowing to me is like it looks to me like the US, I mean, I know there's the whole anti-Semitism thing going on, which I don't necessarily
did you see Carney Street?
Of course I don't agree with that. But anyways, but they seem to be the only bulwark against free expression, truly, even though it's not 100%. But you know, no, I didn't see Carney's tweet
about us in the UK and France. Just a big freak out on Israel, basically.
A big alliance against Israel?
Against Israel, yeah.
Well, I mean, Trump didn't go there when he went to the Middle East. That is a weird signal, right? And the king's coming here. I mean, maybe there's going to be like a new alliance. Is the UK and the French are going to combine and all go under the king. Did you see that tweet by Tisdale? Man, he's getting a lot of hate on that tweet. He's like, they didn't believe Trump when he said it, but when King Charles III came over and said from the crown, we're going to become part of the states, everybody was like, okay, well, I guess it's happening. And they think it's okay all of a sudden. It was a pretty funny tweet.
When's he come here?
27th, right? I think. It's like in a week. So what is it today? Tuesday, Wednesday? So probably a week, I think, is the throne speech.
I'll be out of town for the, we'll be out of town for the summit.
No, it's May. It's now, no, isn't it?
No, the like G7 when Trump and everyone's in Alberta, like 2 hours.
From yeah.
Honestly, I think they're closing the whole Highway 40. So but I was going to try and go down there with my Indian card and say, well, hey man, I got to go hunting. See if I could snap some pics.
That's a good one. That might be the only way you can get in.
There's no way they're letting me in with guns.
Well, I mean, do you want to? Well, speaking of Canada and traveling and stuff, can I play a little clip from Market Mania to kick it off?
Sure. I was trying to get him on the show too.
I know.
He never replies.
No. Okay, ready? So this is. Let me know when you want to stop it. But this is at the very beginning. But there's some examples here of people that are.
His head always looks like it's about to explode in the thumbnail.
Yeah. Yeah.
The boycott of leaving Western countries is getting worse. Why is this happening and where are they going?
Don't come to Canada if you have stable back home. It's not worth it. It's just a fleece. It's a mirage. And that's the truth. Salaries in Nigeria is better. You understand?
This guy's saying it's a fleece being in Canada. Nigeria's wages are better.
Because I can be making an equivalent of $1,000 in Nigerian Naira. The amount that I'm going to spend out of that $1,000 to get my house, rent, everything, may just be about $300 or $400.
So he's saying, just for me to translate this heavy accent here, he makes $100 equivalent of $1,000 a month, right? And he spends on all his stuff $300 or $400. So he has like an extra $500 to himself, so like half his wage. So that would be like us come like a regular wage being like, I don't know, 15K or something.
I have a
black cent,
like 500 for my salary. You can't try that in Canada. You have to cut your coat according to your clothes in Canada.
I'm leaving.
You have to cut your, did you see what I can say? You have to cut your, let me just want to find out what that says.
You can't try that in Canada. You have to
cut your coat. According to your clothes in Canada.
To cut your coat according to your clothes in Canada.
I'm leaving Canada and I'm not coming back. I just finished crying because the healthcare system in this country is so bad.
If you look at a place like Canada, the pyramid housing market is set up in such a way that people have relied on their home equity for years and years and years. The housing bubble has thrived off high immigration levels, levels which were completely unsustainable, low interest rates and loose lending standards subsidized by the government. But now you are beginning to see the big unwind of not just the housing bubble, but also the immigration bubble. And right now you are seeing more and more people who are running to the exits. They need to sell their home, cash out that equity, and get out of Canada in order to actually realize that gain. Because think about it, even if they sell their home and then sit on that cash, they've then got to pay rent somewhere, and they've then got to deal with the declining currency as well. And many people are moving to such countries like Mexico. They're going to places like Costa Rica. They're going to places like the Dominican Republic, Florida, Panama, Colombia, Ecuador. There are many places that people are going, including places in Southeast Asia. And many of these places are very affordable places to live, which offer a lower cost of living. And a lot of the pensioners that are moving out of necessity. It's because they simply cannot afford to live in Canada once they retire, because the fact is they need to cash out that home equity in order to live off it because they haven't got a retirement. So many people in Canada don't have a retirement, and the state pension in Canada is abysmal, and you would never be able to live off that. So instead of
isn't that crazy, eh? Out of all the money we put into all these programs, and they're not enough to support people anyways. The state pension is not enough for people to live on.
Going onto the streets and going homeless, these pensioners then look to move somewhere else. Now,
if you invested your pension yourself, the same amount they take for the same amount of time. And that then it would be six times. So I'm talking about across all income levels, you know, even if you're, so if you're in low income, you're paying low end of it. So, but that's still, whatever you pay into it, the on the low end would be six times. And that, so if you just put it in your own, like,
savings
average return.
No, but how much? Like 5% or 10% or
like eight. If you could get eight a 7 or 8% return on it, which I think is like industry standard, basically, then you would have six times the monthly payment that you get from the CRA. Six times.
Monthly income.
Yeah, the monthly pay that they get you. If it was your own and you were paying yourself, it would be six times as much.
Yeah. Well, what is it like, especially you being in Calgary, are you seeing this too? So this is like from Kate O'Rourke here. She says, get out of the cities. And this is from Contrarian. Canadian taxes are so insane. So it's not just federal. This isn't just a federal and provincial problem, right? So here is, how can anyone afford to live here? Property tax on a townhouse I own went from $6,500 3 years ago to almost $97,000. Here it is right here, $97,000, almost $10,000. So it looks like it's an $875,000 townhouse. I wonder what city it is.
I'm in the sticks, buddy. That ain't a thing out here.
No, I know. But
and then once you get up over 40 acres, I think it's like most of the people around here that are on over 40 acres are probably paying around $1,300 or $1,400 a year in property tax.
So that's like a 30-40% increase in 3 years. That's pretty crazy. How much did you say?
Under $2,000, probably around $1,400 a month. Once you get over 40 acres, you get into you get a special rural rate.
Okay. So here's another one from June Marie. She says, I received my tax notice from the city of Edmonton. My property taxes are now $1,342 per month for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath bungalow.
And then, if you go into a townhouse or a building, I mean, when Shauna left her condo, I think the fucking condo fees were up to like $400 a month.
Oh, my mom pays $1,000.
It's like, why are those going to stop, right? Those are just going to keep going. Plus, they can still just cash call you whenever they want.
So, and this, a bungalow, a 1 year increase of $230 per month. I mean, I can't get over this. Edmonton, $1,342 per month.
The property you already own.
Per month, though.
I mean, this would be a huge thing I'd like to see in the States. Is like, The first tax that should go, arguably before even income tax, is property tax. You should not be paying fucking tax on property that you already own.
Well, so how do you pay for the your city's expenses, your municipal expenses then?
I don't know, but it can't be property tax because I think that you shouldn't be losing property that you've already fucking paid for. I mean, this is a different incident in most of the cities because you're paying a mortgage and the bank owns your shit anyway. But I mean, you're talking about people, you could theoretically lose a ranch that you've had in the family for 100 fucking years because you didn't pay the taxes on it. I don't know how the city's got to pay for their shit. I mean, maybe there's a municipal tax. You know, maybe there's just
It's just not based on your property. I think it's just the easy way. The easiest way is to base it on property, but maybe it should be based on something else then. I don't know.
You shouldn't pay tax on something that you've already paid tax on when you bought it.
So right? Yeah, that's a good, point, but it's not. But it's not
tax. Pay tax on it right now. So you just pay tax on it once and then fucking.
Forever. I know, but this isn't really a tax on your property. It's just used to calculate whatever goes to the municipal, right? I mean, that's
no, it is a tax on your property because you're charged it outside of the municipalities as well. So I guess that argument would be that out here the property tax is going to like. Plowing the range roads and the wheelchair and the garbage dump and that.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, you'll lose your property if you don't pay it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying there. So here's a couple comments. So many seniors in West Van had to sell because they could not afford taxes on homes they purchased before it became overpriced. They walk around with a key around their neck because their stuff is in storage and they live in small apartments or condos now. It's heartbreaking. Seniors should enjoy their golden years, not worry about housing. It's crazy. Their solution is to tax us more and increase competition for affordable homes by bringing 2 million more in per year. And then some comments on this one too. We moved back to small town. Oh, this is like me. Small town SK, 4-bedroom house, double garage, 4-car parking pad. Well, that's pretty big. Huge backyard, $1,000 a month, mortgage, taxes, and insurance. I work 4 to 5 years on the road, 4 to 5 months on the road. Doesn't really matter. Just got tired of paying. But the wife is from there.
How much is your property tax?
It's about $2,200 a year. Let's say $2,300 a year, $2,200 a year. So what is that per month? That's 200.
Your lot's probably a decent size compared to a city lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good size. I mean, we have a double garage on there. So, but what does he mean by mortgage month, $1,000 per month, mortgage, taxes, and insurance? I mean,
so that means that's combined, his mortgage combined with his
property taxes,
property tax monthly. So your property tax monthly is like about, you know, 180.
Yeah.
And your mortgage is pretty cheap too, right?
So actually it's around this.
You're probably, I mean, when I look, when yes. I think about it, just from the numbers you told me, that's probably almost exactly where you're at. It's very
This Glenn Allen and I have a lot in common. Ancient Mariner National Camp Fly Fisher. Wow.
Maybe you guys can hang out. Your first Saskatchewan buddy.
I already have some from the other podcast. So, yeah. Our boys loving it. Ride their bikes to school. $900 for family golf membership. Great fishing. The wife is from there. Same as mine. So it doesn't really matter. Just got tired of paying arm and a leg for everything. Yeah, I agree. So my insurance is over $100 a month. Actually, it's over $200 with everything, the mortgage insurance and the taxes. And then, so that would be $200, $400. Yeah, I'm about $1,200 probably with all that stuff.
Compared to where you were at in the city?
Oh, well, you remember what my rent went from, what was it, $1,600 to $4,000? No.
$2,600 to $4,000,
yeah.
I'm still caught in the grip of the city out here.
I mean, I'm far enough away that it doesn't bother me, but it still affects pricing pretty heavily. I mean, I could get what I'm in now for a third the price or a quarter the price if I was another few hours out.
The problem with these small towns in the prairies is that your supplies are pretty expensive. It takes a bit to get your shit out here. So, you know.
I went to Costco today.
Food. Did you? Yeah.
Costco trip. Dude.
I've been doing the Costco thing. I have been because of that. You know, I'm going, like, I'll go and buy like paper towels and toilet paper and all the stuff that costs an arm and a leg for the smaller packages here.
Yeah, and then you just supplement the rest of the time.
Exactly. You're just
supplementing your big order. And then I've got all most of my meat already too. So that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
As well, dude, I got that big Republic of Alberta sticker in the back window of my truck. And out of all the stickers I've ever had, this one seems to be the most triggering. I mean, I've triggered multiple people, not around my small town, but I went to the city today and there was literally like an old lady with like gray hair, like an old hipster lady behind me. Like I'd noticed in my mirror, I was like, is this lady yelling? And I look in my mirror and she's like yelling and like waving at me. I don't know what she's saying because I got like, we're both in our cars with our windows up. I think my window was down. I had some music playing. And I was just laughing. And then she pulled up beside me and I looked over and she's like, just like literally almost foaming at the mouth, like freaking out. I mean, I couldn't help but laugh while I was sitting waiting.
Did she see you laugh?
I mean, she was turning. Oh yeah. When I looked over and she was yelling, I was fucking laughing. And I couldn't help but just keep laughing because I'm this lady is driving down the street fucking screaming. Her day is ruined just by a sticker in my window. Now, I would argue that a fellow Albertan that strongly disagrees with me has more grounds to be angry about it because, you know, we might win the vote. And then that person's life is, you know, arguably changed in some way. Where I really do have a problem is when it's like the rest of the country freaking out. It's like, you guys are just little authoritarians, you know, you're just freaking out about us democratically wanting to go a different way, but you just can't have it. I mean, it really just shows you that how authoritarian Canadians are. You can't do that. You can't, we're keeping this, we're keeping that. It's like, hey man, you know, if you guys were like, we're going to vote to leave, I'd be like, cool, man. None of my business. Good luck.
I know. And meanwhile, like this is a post from Eva Chippy up here. From 2014 to 2024, Alberta contributed, right, $346 billion to Canada through federal taxes, CPP and EI. So that would be the pension plan and employment insurance, but received only $80 billion in transfers back, a net loss of $266 billion. When you look at the numbers without emotion, it's obvious why Alberta's independence movement is growing and why there's a growing scrutiny over provincial leaders who did not or are not pushing harder for the province's interests. If Alberta had retained its contributions, its 2024 revenue could have been $113 billion instead of $72 billion. So I'm just rounding the numbers here. $114 billion compared to $72 billion. And what does Alberta get in return? Not even a thank you. Instead, the province faces criticism and performative gestures from Ottawa. Patriotism, fear, lack of awareness, or hope for better outcomes might explain the hesitation, but can any Albertan rationally argue against independence given these numbers? Given these figures and growing sentiment, it's hard to argue against Albertans seriously exploring independence. It's
how
time
much
to
do you think that is? That you said $266 billion, right?
Yes. Over 10 years.
Per Albertan.
Well, I mean, it's 71,000 per person in their debt GDP per capita.
Yeah, it's about 59,000. If we go with 4.5 million Albertans, it's 59,000 per person.
Over 10 years.
Yeah, over 10 years. That's
the average salary. I mean, that's the average
per
salary.
Person. So that means if you're in a family of four, that they've taken fucking $250,000 out of your household, directly or indirectly. I mean, that might not show up directly as money in your household. That might show up as better healthcare, better roads, cheaper gasoline, better services, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's $250,000 for a family of four. Cause I'm not doing it by taxpayer. I'm doing it by head.
Oh, that's huge then. I mean, that's huge. Cause even just if you were doing it by taxpayer, that would almost be 10% back over 10 years. That's enough for an RSP, like that's how much, that's enough to save for retirement, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, just double checking my math the other way, and it is correct, $266 billion.
Well, how many people? Did you go by 5 million?
I went by 4.5 million.
Okay, it's going to hit 5 million this year.
So then you're 55,000-ish.
Apparently.
You're still north of 50,000.
Okay, so I'm going to just play this then for you. But I do want to deconstruct it a bit after. I don't know if you've seen this. This guy here.
In 1995, the population of Alberta was 3.8 million people. Keep that number in mind. There were 5,000 employees for Alberta Health at that time. Fast forward to today, we have 4.8 million, just north of 4.8 million people. Just about a million, a little bit more than a million more than in 1995. How many people here know how many employees there are at Alberta Health Services? By the way, that's an oxymoron. But how many people here know what the answer is? It's 130,000 folks are on the payroll for Alberta Health. Does that even make sense to you? Of course not. It doesn't make sense. And so you have to ask the question, why is that? Is it possible that there might be fraud, waste, and abuse in the healthcare system? Having worked in it for 32 years, I can tell you that I know firsthand that there is.
So that guy's getting a bit roasted now because those numbers are not correct. Can you pick out the incorrect numbers out of this?
There's not 130,000 employees.
Okay, I don't know about that actually. Let's say I did do some checking with Grok here too, because some couple people in the comments were roasting him. But the population in 95 was 2.7. Not 3.8. I mean, that's a pretty easy one to get. So, you know, this doesn't help the cause, right? When people are out there like talking like this and he had their thing wrong. Like, did he mean to say 2.8 instead of 3.8? Oh, I'm not sharing the tab. Interesting, eh? So there was also between 92 and 2000. So right around his date of the healthcare employees being 5,000, they cut 14,700. That was, healthcare positions were eliminated or had hours reduced as part of cost-saving measures. That was budget cuts under Ralph Klein, King Ralph. While exact figures, employment figures for 95 are not provided, we can infer that the healthcare workforce was substantial but undergoing reduction. So then they start using modern times as a benchmark, which isn't good because they're talking about 11% of the total employment is 247,000. Healthcare workers. That's from 2021 numbers. So I kind of asked another question about like how many do I have working in healthcare now? And in 2021 it was 247,000. More recent data talks about it being like 113,000 employees, 9,500 physicians, midwives, volunteers, all that kind of stuff. But these posts on X claim that Alberta Services had 130,000 in 2025 for a population. These figures are inconsistent with the 2021 data. And the population estimate in these is outdated as Alberta's population has grown significantly since then. So it sounds it's more like 5 million now. And it's, I don't know what the actual total is, but even if it was
20,000, even if you took the 5,000 and added the 14,000 extra, gave him the 2.7 and doubled it, you still needed four times as many healthcare workers to deliver probably a less amount of service. Now, I don't know how much stuff they didn't have going on in 1994. You know, they didn't have a bunch of cancer centers all over the place. Well,
Alberta Health Services was only created in 2008. So it came around right around the crash there. So I guess that's why I just don't like how, you know, if you're gonna do stuff like this on stage, it should be fairly accurate, right? Like, don't get the basic population.
Don't be hyperbolic.
Yeah.
Well, on that same sort of note, we can jump over to this because this is the same sort of thing that I predict is going to slowly start happening with separation in Alberta. Alberta.
Hang on a sec. Do people think your sticker is that sticker there? That.
Which.
Yeah, the sticker on your truck. Do people think it's Alberta Republicans?
I don't think so. It's a big black circle with the Alberta crest in the middle and says Republic of Alberta.
Okay.
I made it myself. It's a one-off. Alberta pension plan is now backed by most Albertans, says Bull. From 81 to 2022, Albertans contributed 53.6 billion more to the Canadian pension plan than its retirees received. That'd be about a fifth. So that's probably about 10,000 per Albertan. An Alberta government commission poll found 55% of Albertans want to leave the Canada pension plan for a provincial alternative should it guarantee equal or better benefits. That represents a sharp increase, with a February ledger poll showing only 23%. So now the reason this is interesting is because this was that same thing, that Alberta pension plan came out, everyone freaked out, said it was crazy. And then they had 6 months to just sort of like disseminate all the information of what the numbers are, which takes a while to get down to all different layers, but it would seem like in like 4 months or 3 or 4 months, that's support has nearly doubled, which is sort of the same thing I'm going to see happening with this referendum on independence. It's like those numbers like you just showed, you know, where it's like, hey man, being a Canadian is all right, but you know, if I can double my fucking take home income every month, then it's a no-brainer. I can, you know, you think of the difference in the future you can provide for your family and your kids with you know, saving half your money instead of just spending every cent. So the idea of an Alberta pension plan was previously considered after the 2019 federal election due to Alberta paying more into the CPP than it received. Premier Daniel Smith had expressed doubts about public appetite for an APP, citing uncertainty about the amount of money Ottawa would transfer. However, this new poll suggests a significant shift in favor, potentially fueled by broader separatist sentiment in Alberta. Albertans' next contribution, so that's it, more than any other province. So Albertans' net contribution to the Canada pension plan was more than six times as much as any other province. So if you're an Albertan, your ratio is six times any other province.
And part of that is demographic too, right? And
part of that is demographic. And then they see it's us and BC sort of losing money. The Fraser Institute report reveals that Albertans' net contribution to the Canada pension plan from 81 to 2022 is $53.6 billion, over six times more than any other province. Albertan workers have been helping to fund the retirement of Canadians from coast to coast for decades, and Canadians ought to know that without Alberta, the Canada pension plan would look much different, said Tegan Hill, director of an Alberta policy at the policy think tank. God damn it, what is going on? You really need to keep popping that up. The Fraser Institute suggests Albertans could have lower payroll taxes for equivalent retirement benefits by leaving the CPP, citing the province's strong employment, higher incomes, and younger demographics. Premier Smith said weeks ago that there's no clear public interest in Alberta leaving the CPP, a move opposed by the federal government concerning the $699 billion fund. The federal government hasn't provided anticipated asset transfer details as of writing. With the government planning consultations and a referendum in late spring 2026, both the APP and Alberta's potential separation from Canada could be on the ballot. Smith had previously cited a report claiming Alberta was entitled to 53%, $370 billion of CPP assets. However, the chief actuary rejected this allocation, and economist Trevor Toome estimated Alberta's share to be closer to $150 billion.
Still 25%. I mean, if we could negotiate that up to two,
I'm in. I'm in either way. I'm not getting a pension. Premier Smith acknowledged that if leaving the CPP doesn't significantly reduce premiums, Albertans might not support it. And she isn't currently seeing public demand for a vote on the issue through citizen-initiated vote is possible. Alberta argues the CPP disadvantages its demographics and economy, projecting a $5 billion savings in the first year of its own plan. Finance Minister Nate Horner indicated a review of the actuary's report is ongoing, postponing referendum discussions. Experts estimate Alberta's share to be lower, with the CPP investment board suggesting around $100 billion. The proposal had limited support outside of Alberta, though Quebec has had its own pension plan since 1966. the nice little caveat on the end. I mean, everyone's freaking, but there's provinces that are already doing it.
It looks like if you were to, the numbers that I saw, 79,000, I believe it was, or 71,000. I think it was 79,000. Just right off the bat, as the numbers are, with no growth at all in Alberta, that would be your GDP per capita. So it would be number 15 in the world. In the world, dude, right off the bat.
Nice.
Imagine how quickly you could climb that up if you just landed at 15. So Luxembourg, Singapore, Macau, Ireland, Qatar, Ireland. Wow. Benefits from tech multinationals and tax policies. Oh, so they're all above 118, 106. So, and Norway, Qatar and Norway. So they're all above 100. And then Switzerland, Brunei, Guyana, United States.
What would Canada's go down to without Alberta?
UAE, Denmark, San Marino, Netherlands, and then Alberta should be in there, I think, if the number is right, right before Austria.
What would Canada's go down to without Alberta?
I don't know. You think he? I don't think Brock would know that.
I don't know. Canada's GDP per capita be reduced to without Alberta. What's that, like 55?
55.
That's what like the GDP per capita is in Canada?
55,000? I don't know.
Who's going to know?
2,000 billion, Canada's population, and so 11. So total GDP, 2,142 billion, and Alberta's is 452. So it would be 1.690 billion, right? So excluding it. So he does all these calculations here. You can see this, right? Total population, 40 million. So per capita would be 1690 divided by 35.5, 47,000.
Oh, yeah. And right now it's 53.
53. So it would drop by like 6,000 per person, right? Oh yeah. It's talking about all this, but that's a pretty good quick calculation here, right? From Grok. So Alberta would likely hang on. Canada's nominal would be in the range of 41,000 to 47,000.
Ouch. I mean, the thing is the average person that hates us for wanting to separate doesn't know any of these numbers.
The thing is, and I don't really even like the GDP, but that's what everybody's using, right? At least it's a standard measurement that everybody's using. I don't really agree with it and I don't like it, but I mean, it just, you know, it is a way to compare what they're measuring against other countries. So you would be way down. I mean, Canada would be way down. I mean, we've all seen those numbers about how low Canada's been with the increase, right? I think they're one of the few Western countries that has fallen in GDP per capita and not grown.
With Alberta. You must have seen. You already know what it is.
Barf in my mouth. But
this is, I mean, she's from Alberta.
I didn't even know that.
Calgarian Jan Arden. I mean,
maybe that's who was waving at you. You don't think it was her?
I think. He has a show. I wonder how many people are going to show up.
Hey, Alberta. Hey, a bunch of fucking separatist wackos. How you doing? Feeling good about yourselves? You're an embarrassment to this country. Everything you have, everything that you have enjoyed, cherished, and benefited from comes from being part of one of the greatest countries on the planet. You guys have your heads so far up your asses that you obviously can't see what pricks you are. The way you are treating Indigenous people, the way you are treating your fellow citizens, your fellow Canadians, you guys are a bunch of creepy little pricks. Alberta will never separate from Canada. It's never going to happen because people like me are going to stand up, throw their shoulders back, and keep fucking yelling and keep standing up for what I know is right. And what you guys are doing is
she's got the accent. I mean, you can tell she's an Albertan. She's got the accent.
This is what I'm talking about. I mean, there's a visceral hatred.
It's crazy.
For the Alberta separatists. Was it like this for the, I was a little too young. Was it like this for the Quebecers?
I don't think it was. No. I mean, they had more of a distinct culture, you know. It was maybe understood because of the language thing.
What? Guitars, Cadillacs, and hillbilly music don't count as a culture?
No, I guess not.
Well, did you see this one yet? I mean, here's some nice, this is Toronto culture, not Montreal, but you remember during the Freedom Convoy, they left those special lanes for emergency access. They still got the Emergencies Act thrown at them. So I wonder what'll happen with this one. That is stomped in the street trying to go by. It can't get by because of protesters. Can you guess what kind?
Don't tell me pro Hamas. Palestinian.
They're actually just they're making the ambulance now do a turnaround. Not to let it go through. There's a bunch of cops there. You know, you'd think they could just like create a path through, but instead they just make a turnaround. They're just turning around, buddy.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Yeah.
You know, and then the cop not just drive a car through and stay the fuck out of the way to the people. You know?
It's hard to hear you when the thing's playing something that you're breaking up, so.
There's no point in playing it anyway. It's literally just the ambulance goes and it can't get through. They don't let it through. The cops don't help. It has to turn around and take another route to the hospital because of the Palestinian protesters, the mostly peaceful protesters. So I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think, I mean, hopefully whoever was in the ambulance made it and was okay.
Well, I saw a lot of drumming and like some, a lot of noise in Ottawa, and I was like, and nobody seemed to be, like, they didn't seem to care, right? It's just very hypocritical, I feel like, compared to what happened at the convoy.
That's how they get you.
It gets a bit depressing if we let it, you know? I mean, I could easily just go, like, this is just impossible. We're just fighting, like, an unbelievable battle against, you know, it's like fifth generation warfare against misinformation. And we're all just in completely different worlds. We are in two completely different worlds.
Absolutely. Do you want to do your be all you can't be?
Sure. I saved a little bit of this guy's clip, just showing this graph. So he's going to talk a little bit about the mortgage, but it was about Carney's shocking statement that will bankrupt Canadians overnight. But here's this cool graph that's been going around. Trudeau becomes prime minister here. Now this red one is temporary immigrants, and this orange one here is net immigration. So there's this big gap here, and now net immigration is just
birth rate.
What the blue is?
You see those?
I'm not sure what the blue is.
I think the blue is birth rate, the natural.
Yeah,
birth.
Actually, I have it in my bookmarks. I wasn't gonna show the graph itself tonight, but it's right there. So the blue is the natural growth rate. So let me just show you that quickly, because it is worth showing. So the blue is natural growth rate. So there's our natural growth rate, 61. So 46 to, it went up 61, then it starts dropping down in the 60s, leveled out in the 70s. And then peaked a little bit in 91 and then just started dropping to 2007, came up a little bit more, and then just woof, since 2008, basically just collapsed, the natural one. But then there's this huge gap with net immigration. And then this is the weird anomaly. I mean, this just cannot be not engineered when you look at this anomaly here, right? I mean, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
It really is insane to think that this is happening, not just maybe for different reasons, right? That's what's weird. It's not the UK didn't happen the same reasons. There's UK's immigration and Australia's on. It wasn't the same. And even the States was all different, but they all went, there was an anomaly in all of them, but all for different reasons. And that seems planned too. So here he's going to get into, this is Spencer Gatton, and he's going to get into some real estate job growth stuff, but then he's going to get into how the government's programs, how efficient they are.
And you see the monthly full-time job growth in Toronto is dropping like crazy. I'll remove my face there. Look at these numbers that we're seeing. And you hear these things and they say these things and you wonder, oh, really? Is it the GST on new built homes that are the problem? Or is it that people are losing jobs? Is it that we have skyrocketing immigration? What is it? And now let's talk about the housing problem for a minute. And you guys might not like it, but guess what? The way Canada designed our current economy is around real estate. About 40% of Canada's GDP can be related back to real estate. That is a staggering number. So guess what, guys? Real estate in Canada can't come down. They refuse to say it because they would lose votes and they would have to acknowledge why it can't come down. So the scary thing is, as of right now, if real estate goes down by any more meaningful amount, it would be depressionary destruction of Canada. Now, are there ways out of this? Yes. So many people keep thinking we need to build housing cheaper. Sorry, that can't be done. We've moved past building houses cheaper. So what can be done? We can increase the amount of houses built, which will help with demand so that things don't go 20 offers and over asking. We can decrease immigration, which we obviously know now has been a huge stressor on the housing market and other social services. We can lower that. We can increase building. So those are two factors that we can do. But the third thing that we have to do, which I don't trust in the government because they can't put anything together, and I'll show you in a second how bad government-run programs are, which is why I don't trust in what their plans are moving forward, is we need to develop industries and build Canada in a way that's not based around real estate. If we can create new industries, new ways to help increase wages so that Canadians can earn more money, then housing affordability will get better, not housing prices go down. That's the difference. Affordability can be changed by how much you earn versus the price of the house. So if we slowly grind sideways and up, that's fine if we can find a way to increase productivity and wages for Canadians, because then the purchase price, which you kind of alluded to there, which is we need to make sure Canadians can afford more housing. Yes, but we want to make sure they can afford actual homes to have kids in. So we need to create better, more diverse industries that we can build a country around. And don't get bummed that house prices in Canada can't come down, because it's not that we can't find a solution. We can. We've seen in this very video, Canada has tons and tons of industry, resources, all sorts of things. If we can get out of our way, stop being idiots, Canada could start crushing on the global stage, and then being less reliant on real estate, we could have prices adjust, people could earn more money, and we could cut immigration to lower the demand. So there are ways to make this work. But here's why I don't have faith in the government, and it's so embarrassing as to why these projects will actually come through. Let's take a look at what happens when the government tries to make changes and expand and invest in themselves.
Have you heard this?
Does this include the Carney clip where they ask him if he'll make housing cheaper and he just refuses to say it?
No, it's not really about housing. It's about,
we're not going to make it cheaper. Program. We're going to make it more affordable. We're going to make it so you can afford it more. We're not going to make it cheaper.
Interesting. Is that because they don't want the GDP to come down? Or?
Well, because none of these old people, none of the boomers are interested in their house values going down. That's their fucking retirement plan, is selling that house. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to make houses cheaper, that makes the houses you're living in cheaper. That means the houses that you've signed mortgages on, you know, that, so now you've bought a house for 500 or 600 or 800,000 that now
have any equity left.
Carney might be threatening to make it worth four, but your mortgage is still for eight. So,
or you've just, you just have less equity. You can't do reverse mortgages, or you can't get money out. You can't get liquid money out because there's no equity left.
Even then, the bank's not going to change the price you bought the house at.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, a lot of them are, even if they're paid off, it's still a problem because it's equity that's dropping.
Yeah, so exactly. It's the retirement plan. I mean, they had to drop the home equity, or not the home equity, but they had to drop the capital gains thing just to keep the boomers.
So, how many they're short in the Canadian armed forces?
17,000
Department of Defense. Yeah, that's the number that came to mind, right? So they have they need to fill 17,000 jobs at the Department of Defense. So they came out with a new recruitment tool.
Selves and make things better. Okay, let's see their actual ability to pull off a special project.
The Canadian military is short more than 14,000 troops. This is meant to help fill the ranks, a new online recruitment portal. But the rollout has been rocky.
All the glitches that are happening have been creating a lot of confusion and frustration for applicants.
Users have received error messages like this one.
Guys, take a second to look at this online portal. This is one of the most basic website setups ever for creating an account and submitting your information. We have, you could set this up on Squarespace or just any like basic website. So seeing this, okay, let's check this out.
There might be a server issue preventing your login. Please try again later. One frustrated applicant who's trying to re-enlist spoke to Global News and says it took him dozens of attempts over 3 days to set up a profile.
Imagine you want new recruits. They're like, would you even want to go into a Department of Defense? You can't even get in like 3 days. And I mean, you know how frustrating this stuff is.
He asked that he not be identified over concerns it could jeopardize his application. I applied 2 months ago and haven't heard a thing. I was hoping to be in uniform by summer, and it's clear that's optimistic.
Yeah, nothing to see here. Just our struggling military can't get a website to just onboard people to sign up working. These are the people who are going to take on America, too, by the way. Mount up, patriots. But this is the military we're working with. This is the government competency that we have to deal with that we expect is going to be taking on the special projects, you know, these nation building projects that is going to diversify our economy and get people more jobs and, you know, the housing accelerator. They can't get a website portal set up for us to onboard people.
Any enthusiasm I had for re-enlisting has completely evaporated.
Did they give us the cost?
I don't know. Let's see.
The department could have done a little bit better in terms of communicating that those problems might have happened.
The Department of Defense acknowledged issues were discovered in early March after the new portal's initial rollout, saying the system was not able to handle the volume of traffic and that the problems have...
You believe that?
No.
Too much.
About like 75 or unless it's bots. I mean, they could be getting swarmed by bots.
Since been rectified.
The Canadian military is undergoing a very broad digital modernization process. This, quite frankly, has been an enormous undertaking. Canada, generally speaking, has lagged behind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really trust anybody from the Global Affairs Institute.
You don't say. We can't get a portal open just to get people registered. That's insane. The fact that this is us catching up. So one of the benefits when you have a developing nation is normally that the nation doesn't have old infrastructure that you have to work around. So when new efficient technology gets put out, you get to go, oh, we get to actually jump the line, like phone lines or internet cables or anything.
That's a great point.
Those things. It's like, oh, we didn't upgrade over time and have to redo everything. We just get to start with, boom, the better stuff because it's now getting instituted for the first time. We're catching up with 1998 technology.
The military's ongoing recruitment crisis has come into renewed focus as U.S. President Donald Trump insists on making Canada the 51st state.
I say never say never.
The prime minister has said never. Mark Carney appointed a new defense minister this...
Don't worry, guys. We're getting prepared to take on the U.S. so they don't make us the 51st state. We can't get people to log in or even re-register as recruits because it's just too complicated for us. There were so many errors. We just can't figure them out. But don't worry. We're going to pull it together and take on one of the largest armies in the entire world. So let's mount up patriots. Anyways, guys, you made it...
There you go. You know what? It's probably a generational thing. People won't even get be all that you can be. I mean, I don't even know if you know about that, but yeah, it was a whole campaign, you know, be all that you, was it a Canadian one, I guess? Be all that you can be.
It's an American thing.
In the army. And yeah.
You don't have an army. You have the Canadian Armed Forces. The USA has an army.
the Department of National Defense, the DND.
That's what we have?
Yeah.
Not the DOD?
That's the states. Ours should be the DND. Yeah.
Well, let's jump over to this. I wanted to go through this quick. This is the final report of the expert panel on MAID and mental illness. I'm sure you've seen that pamphlet going around.
Yep. Was it real? Is it real?
I haven't been able to confirm its realness. So I'm not.
Yeah, it looked real, but I can, you know, those things can be made pretty easy.
Yeah, I could have made that pamphlet if I wanted to. So I'll just go down. So here's the introduction and background. On March 17th, 2021, Bill C-7, an act to amend the criminal code, received royal assent and came into force. This bill amended Canada's original 2016 MAID legislation. Bill C-7 includes three provisions with relevance for MAID for persons with mental illness. First, it says mental illness is not an illness, disease, or disability for the purposes of MAID eligibility criterion of a serious and incurable illness, disease, or disability. This statement has the effect of excluding the majority of persons whose mental illness is their sole underlying medical condition. Second, this exclusion is to be automatically repealed on March 17th, 2023. Third, it requires the Minister of Health and Justice to cause an independent review to be carried out by experts respecting recommended protocols, guidance, and safeguards to apply to requests made for medical assistance in dying by persons who have a mental illness.
So I seem to remember that got postponed, right? It got pushed back?
Yeah, now it's pushed back to March 2027.
Oh, okay.
So I thought this was an interesting little caveat in here on First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. Indigenous people in Canada have a unique perspective on death, which need to be considered in the context of emergence of MAID, including MAID and MDSUMC, which is the medical side of it. However, engagements with Indigenous people in Canada concerning MAID has yet to occur. I wonder if they've killed any Indians with it.
Oh, they must have.
Yeah, I guarantee you they have. Through the harmful policies and practices of colonization, such as residential schools. I mean, like MAID isn't a harmful practice. I mean, and through legislation, the federal government has a history of causing harm to First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. So we're not going to MAID them, just the whites. I don't think it says that. Inuit, Métis, compared to the non-Indigenous Canadian population, a disproportionate number of Indigenous people live in poverty, have inadequate housing, a lack of clean drinking water, and have limited access to education and healthcare. Anti-Indigenous racism is also widespread in Canada's healthcare system. As a result, the creation of laws that provide access to MAID concerns have been raised by Indigenous leaders and communities that is easier for people in their communities to access a way to die than to access the resources they need to live well. But let's keep fighting to stay in Canada.
Wow. Oh my God.
At the same time, some Indigenous people in Canada embrace the concept of MAID and wish to support their families and communities through access to the same.
Ooh.
I mean, do you know anyone who's just stoked to kill their family?
No.
Most of the family dynamics I know are older people considering it and their children being mortified.
Yeah.
At the same time, it is well known that First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, especially in rural and remote areas, experience limitations in accessibility to healthcare services in Canada. Careful consideration needs to be given by all levels of government to policy and resources that ensure Indigenous people seeking MAID are afforded equitable access in their home community. So we got to make sure we can kill the Indians too. Enough to put it in here as a line item.
I mean, equal rights. Wow.
We're the fastest growing demographic right now. So that means they need to really up the MAID to slow that down. To more clearly identify which conditions fell within the panel's mandate, the panel must compare the description of mental illnesses above with the federal government's stated rationale for its exclusion cause, namely that there is disagreement among experts concerning if, when a mental illness can be considered irredeemable. Capacity assessments are more difficult to conduct given that symptoms of mental illness can affect a person's ability to understand and or appreciate the nature and consequences of treatment decisions. The trajectory of mental illness is generally harder to predict, and the desire to die is a symptom of some mental illness.
Oh, that was Snoop Dogg there. The desire to die.
A patient must consent to any proposed medical intervention, including MAID. Consent must be provided by a capable person. Wouldn't that like rule out mental illness like right away? All adults, including those with mental disorders, are presumed to have decision-making capacity to provide informed consent or refusal. Oh, okay. But even if you have a mental disorder, we're just going to say it's fine. However, this presumption may be displaced if it can be shown that there are reasonable grounds to conclude that a given person lacks capacity in relation to a particular decision. In such situation, a person's capacity to decide about a given intervention must be assessed, which basically boils down to, if you don't have a family member that's fighting for you, the government is just going to kill you because they're not going to argue for any of this on your behalf. Clearly, they've been just upping the numbers and expanding it. They want to get kids in now. They want to get kids so they don't have to ask their parents anymore. I mean, it's out of fucking control. Suicidality. Parliament, in legalizing MAID, affirmed that in certain cases, a desire to bring one's death is rational, understandable, and can be assisted without violating the criminal code. The set of cases where this applies are described by the eligibility criteria. However, in considering MAID requests for persons who have mental disorders, it must be recognized that thoughts, plans, and actions to bring about one's death may also be a symptom of the very condition for which MAID is being requested. Of the 157 mental disorders in the DSM-5, four main diagnoses include suicidality as a potential symptom of the disorder. Psychiatric analysis. Diagnoses are syndromes, meaning they are defined by a list of features, not all of which may be present in an individual case. This means that even if a person has a diagnosis for which suicidality is a symptom, this individual may not have that symptom. So,
oh my God, that's a good gray area there, right?
We got to make as much gray as possible. Furthermore, the vast majority of people with mental disorders, including these diagnoses, do not die by suicide. That said, there is a strong association between completed suicide and the presence of mental disorder. In the suicide literature, there is some variability as to the... shouldn't it just be good for suicide too? At this point, does it really matter? What difference at this point does it make?
What do you mean it should be good for suicide? I mean, that's what this is. I mean,
at this point, you couldn't just go in there and say, I'm sick of it. You know, that's not a good enough reason.
It's not right now.
Rotting it so much that isn't
that good enough reason?
No, you have to have a mental disorder.
No, you don't. No.
No.
No, you can request.
You have to have an incurable or end of life thing like within reach
or something like that. You have to have a morbidity, a comorbidity.
Yeah, I don't. So I guess you just can't decide you want to have it over with. So. Here's some examples. B is a 56-year-old man referred for a MAID assessment by his family doctor.
Oh, my God.
For severe pain for 3 years, unresponsive to intervention. The patient stated, "This pain is killing me and I don't want to live like this." He said he received no help from the pain clinic. The pain clinic reported that he has attended on 4 occasions. He refused the treatment options, including oral and injectable medications, as well as physiotherapy. He insisted on receiving prescriptions for opiate analgesics, and became verbally abusive when these were refused. According to the PP, the patient had been fired from his job 3 years ago for alcohol intoxication at work. He had been drinking heavily for a number of years and had assaulted his wife on several occasions. Well, intoxicated, blaming her for her problems. During the assessment, he says, "After I get MAID, I hope my ex-wife feels really guilty. It's her fault. I will be dead." I'm guessing that one got denied, right?
No, I mean, what?
P is a 58-year-old person.
Because it wouldn't be denied because he's in pain and the pain's killing him, right? So...
P is a 58-year-old person with OCD and more recently chronic pain following an automobile accident. They have requested MAID primarily due to the suffering caused by obsessive compulsive disorder, although their pain plays a role in their request. They have tried one medication to treat OCD so far, but stopped it due to side effects. They have participated in a mindfulness group therapy program. They are unwilling to try pain medications because they fear becoming addicted to them. That sounds worse than being dead.
I know, it's weird. Eh? That's a weird. That's a
when
weird.
Their psychiatrist recommended another medication to treat OCD, they were unwilling to discuss it because they had side effects from the first one they tried. They are not willing to try exposure and response prevention therapy, which has the best research behind it. They are not open to learning anything more about it from the assessor.
I don't understand.
Here's assessors should ensure that a requester's wish for death is consistent.
Oh, hang on. That's recommendation for B, isn't it? Or
that's recommendation 8. They don't seem to correlate. By itself, a request for made by a person with a mental disorder should not be interpreted as suicidal ideation, even if suicidality is listed as one of the diagnostic criteria for the person's mental disorder. I mean, what a crazy sentence. Since the majority of made requests will fall under track 2 and require a minimum 90-day assessment period, the requirement of proximate harm to self and mental health legislation of most provinces and territories to permit involuntary hospitalization is not met by the simple fact of making a made request. Here's another example. C is a 70-year-old woman with severe major depressive disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosed at age 18. She has expressed her desire to die since she was 20 years old and made approximately 30 suicide attempts during her life. I mean, at that point, I mean, I'm in, made her, right? I mean, at this point, she tried killing herself 30 times. I mean, she's just going to slash her wrists again. You might as well just throw her in the pod. She has no plan to attempt. She has requested made because the symptoms of her disorders have been refractory to over 35 recognized psychosocial interventions and somatic treatments, and she does not want to try anymore. She has no plan to attempt suicide at present. I don't think we need to get into that. Persons in situations of involuntariness for periods shorter than 6 months should be assessed following this period to minimize the potential contribution of the involuntariness on the request for made. For those who are repeatedly or continually in situations of involuntariness, which I guess is when you can't mentally make your own decisions type thing.
Yeah.
The institution responsible for the person should ensure that the assessments are made or performed by assessors who do not work within or are associated with the institution. Because they might want her to still live so that they could keep getting paid, or maybe they've got attached to her. F is a 40-year-old man who had to stop work due to a combination of physical weakness and loss of ability to plan, organize, and complete tasks, as well as changes to memory and concentration. He does not have a low mood. He believes that he has a serious neurological disorder, but neurological investigations have been normal. He requests made on the basis of the neurological disorder and becomes angry when the first assessor suggests that he may be suffering from a psychiatric disorder. He repeatedly emails and calls the assessor's office to insist that the neurological investigations are incorrect. He makes a complaint to the College of Physicians and Surgeons about the assessor. Finally, he calls the assessor's secretary and demands to speak to him on the phone. Get him on the phone or you will seriously regret it. Okay, down here at the bottom. I mean, those are crazy examples, right? We're driving people crazy.
Yeah, I don't even know what to think about it, to be honest with you. I just don't know. Like, if I don't know what to think.
It should just be privatized. I don't think I want the government involved, who's also in charge of our healthcare, because it's just too much.
Are there insurance implications?
America, we could do GAID.
Yeah.
I don't know. To date engagement, you wouldn't get your insurance if you killed yourself, I'm assuming. To date engagement with Indigenous peoples in Canada concerning MAID is yet to occur. Because of the regional, cultural, and historical differences of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people across Canada, the process of engagement will be most impactful if done by regulatory bodies in each province. This is not only a requirement of legislative processes in some provinces, it's also necessary to ensure local standards of practice reflect the histories, values, and perspectives of First Nations. So they'll throw some feathers in the pod with you. Working collaborations with regional Indigenous health authorities and advisory bodies individually or through formation of a collective advisory body could be the most effective and timely way to proceed. I mean, it really seems like they're trying to convince Indians to kill themselves. Due to the sensitive nature of these consultations, local Indigenous communities may choose to seek advice from elders, knowledge keepers with respect to
ancestral spiritual knowledge and teachings related to assisted dying. The federal government should play an active role in supporting the development of provincial and territorial systems of MAID case review for educational and quality improvement things. Elderly persons with mental disorders. One of the implications of the current legislation is that physically frail elderly person or an elderly person with multiple medical comorbidities seeking MAID primarily due to a mental disorder could be eligible under the Track 1 safeguards. Under current MAID law, a person with physical conditions accepted as a serious and incurable illness, disease, or disability, but who's in an advanced state of irreversible, declining, and enduring intolerable suffering, are primarily due to a mental disorder, could meet the legislative definition of egregious and irredeemable medical condition. Thus, two people seeking MAID for a mental disorder, one who is frail or has multiple medical comorbidities and is elderly, and one who is not, might be approached differently.
That intellectual disability one is interesting because that's going to talk about that'll be me, yeah.
As noted above, the federal government has stated that people with neurodevelopmental and intellectual disabilities are not covered by the mental illness exclusion cause. This means they may request or be considered eligible for MAID at present. So that's like the autistic kids. However, some of the concerns raised about mental disorders could also apply to a person with intellectual disabilities. The panel identified four possible scenarios of requests involving this group of persons. One, a person with an intellectual disability and a comorbid physical condition whose natural death is reasonably foreseeable. A person with cancer, terminal cancer. A person with an intellectual disability and a comorbid physical condition whose natural death is not reasonable foreseeable. Example, a person with epilepsy. Three, a person with an intellectual disability and a mental disorder. And four, a person with an intellectual disability alone. The first two categories of people could potentially be eligible for MAID on the basis of their physical condition. Such requests could proceed under Track 1 and Track 2 safeguards, respectively. Persons in the third and fourth categories may also be potentially eligible if their intellectual disabilities are taken to be serious and incurable illness, disease, or disability, like autism. Requesters who are incarcerated, so this just goes through the jail numbers, which is we're up to adults serving custodial sentences of 2 years or more, housing, federal, blah, blah, blah. As of March 31st, 2022, there have been 5 assisted deaths of prisoners in federal prisons. So MAID represents only 2% of total federal prisons deaths. And the Canadian rate of MAID deaths in 2020 was 2.5%, which I think was up to like almost 5% now, right?
Yeah, I think you're
good. 1 in 20. Conclusion. In a MAID regime based on a person suffering from a medical condition, singling out certain diagnoses for exclusion does not map easily onto the complexity of illness and human experience. Furthermore, focusing only on the vulnerabilities of one group, persons with mental disorders, can neglect the potential vulnerabilities of many other requesters. This report is the beginning of a process, not the end. The panel has offered initial reflections on how to address some of the complexity existing in certain areas of MAID practice. More work will be required by many actors in Canadian society to ensure MAID for persons with mental disorders and indeed MAID practice more broadly evolves in a way that responds appropriately to those Canadians who wish to avail themselves this option. I mean, is there a better way? Could you come up with a better way to say it than that?
Some of it makes sense. I mean, some of it is like, I like the way they teased apart some of those things. Like if you have depression, which suicidality could be a thing, that doesn't mean you're suicidal. Like they've identified some of those things. But it's just, there's all this labeling and all this. It just, I feel like it's a can of worms that opening it up is just making death
panels, basically, where you could have like basically a panel of 12 people deciding if an autistic kid gets to live. I mean, I honestly think that's where this ends, where we're going to be culling fucking kids. Yeah. This is the other end of the the late term abortion thing, the post term abortion.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we could take this abortion thing right up to like, you know, 60.
And like that example of the alcoholic, like you don't think cutting alcohol out, like trying abstinence would be like maybe an option prior to MAID? Like that could be contributing to all those other factors in his life.
The freedom side of me says, if you want to off yourself, I mean,
I know,
who am I to get involved? I just don't like that the government is involved in it. And I don't want my tax dollars involved in it because that puts me involved in it.
I think the problem with that is that if people have mental disabilities that, and they shouldn't, like, what if they're just having an episode and they really shouldn't be saying kill themselves? Like, they might not be in their right mind. And so they're requesting, you know, suicide when they're not in their right mind to, right? So then how do you deal with those situations?
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope. Anyway, I think I did have the other thing, but I'll save that for the next show on Friday because it is, we're already at almost an hour and a half here. So.
Let's do that. I got some stuff to save up too.
Support the show if you like us, alist.ca. Like, subscribe, comment. You can do other stuff on YouTube now too, like Super Chat or become a member. If you do all those stuff, it'd be great, and we will keep making the show. Alist.ca if you want to get the podcast, as well as it does come out in a podcast form. Check out grandamerica.ca for other podcasts, adultbrain.ca for audiobooks, contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill